As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football League show. Derby off the bottom. Good for them. Goodison for Wazza. Elsewhere, Stone Cold Charlie Austin provides the X Factor for Rangers. The Chairboys take a seat at the top of League One. And early leavers left lamenting Lamb exit as Stevenage and Sutton leave it late. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Welcome in then to the first of our bi-weekly romps through the EFL. Joining me, Matt Davis-Adams, today are Adrian Clark.
Hello, Matt.
Sam Parkin's also with us.
Good afternoon, Matt.
And Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, you lucky so-and-so. You managed to get down to the New Den to see the Championship's form horse or one thereof on Saturday. Plenty more of that later. First, let's get straight to the Championship.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines, Fulham top after another thumping win, this time 6-2 against Bristol City. Bournemouth dropped to second after losing at Luton. Derby are off the bottom. Borough are into the playoff places, but Payne, thy name is Reading. A lousy week on the pitch for the Royals, compounded by the decision to strip want-away Liam Moore of the captaincy. Transfer-wise, Stoke have signed perennial Chelsea loanee Lewis Baker and Phil Jagielka after his contract expired at Derby, both featured in Saturday's win over Hull. Troubles brewing in Swansea with Jamie Patterson. He's in a contract dispute. The BBC also reporting that Jake Bidwell set to leave the Swans and join Coventry. And Onel Hernandez has swapped a loan at Borough for one at Birmingham. Chris Wilder called the Cuban one of the best pros I've ever worked with as he books his cab. Right, we're going to start our look back on the weekend's action with Derby against Sheffield United. On Thursday's pod, we spoke with the Athletic's Derby writer Elias Burke about the Rams' attempt to pull off an improbable fight against relegation. Well, they're now off the bottom of the table after beating in-form Sheffield United 2-0 at Pride Park. It was a kind of joyous celebratory atmosphere, Sam, but Wayne Rooney called it his toughest day this after not just Jagielka, but also Graham Shinney left to join Stoke and Wigan respectively. The players that he has got, though, still very much doing the business for him.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, two huge characters you would imagine that have had to leave the club. Jagielka's been nothing short of amazing, really, since he's been there. Got good experience in Stearman to come in with Curtis Davis, so not too many problems there, but an amazing result when you think of the youthfulness of that midfield up against a really, you know, experienced, been there, done it, Championship midfield that Sheffield United can field. Brilliant result, really top atmosphere it looked like at Pride Park, and two of the best goals you're going to see all season.
He's passed two. It's a brilliant run from Lawrence. He's in the penalty area. Can he get the shot away? Still Lawrence! What a goal! What a goal!
I can't... The first one is unbelievable individual skill, but there's something beautiful about that kind of languid, curled effort, finding its spot right inside the far corner.
And now it's Lawrence. Derby looking to finish it. Oh!
Brilliant day for him, but I mean, it sounds like there's going to be tougher days ahead and there's going to be more players leaving, which they're just going to have to accept. And somehow keep going. Whether they can do it or not is a huge ask, but an amazing day for them on the field.
Which was your favourite of the goals, Flo?
I think the second, because the celebration, I think the whole moment was really special. I know it pains you to talk about it, Matt, but yeah, against all odds, what they're doing there with everything in the background. And I imagine, you know, things on Thursday were feeling kind of positive after Wayne Rooney's press conference, where it looked like there was going to be a decision made about a preferred bidder. And then that's kind of rumbled on again, and they still haven't managed to find one, and then players leaving and still a transfer embargo, and it's really difficult. But what they managed to do under the circumstances, their performances recently have been, you know, nothing short of phenomenal, which is surprising everyone, to be honest, because I was definitely someone who thought they had absolutely no chance at survival. Realistically, they are still some way off safety. They're still 8 points away from getting out of the relegation zone, which is quite a lot. So they've done really well to recover after that points deduction, but it's still a tough ask. But they've got what a lot of the sides around them haven't, and that is ridiculous belief. And the fans are behind the team as well. I mean, regardless of what's going on with the issues around the future of the club, the fans are getting behind the players, and that's really important.
Yeah, we went big on the financial situation on Thursday. It's changing hourly, it would seem. Athletic subscribers can read an update on it, with Middlesbrough and Wickham suing Derby for loss of earnings, and how Derby's administrators are hoping to find a way around that. It's in David Ornstein's Monday column. I can understand why Wickham are doing that, but Middlesbrough, that is a little bit baffling to me. Clarkey, just before we came on to record, I saw a tweet from TalkSport saying that Everton are in talks with the Belgian FA to try and get Roberto Martinez back to Goodison, which will be music to Derby fans' ears, because you would assume that Rooney would be, what, second favourite to get that job?
Yeah, he'd be a really popular choice, wouldn't he, at Goodison Park, that is for sure. The fans would love to see Wayne Rooney return. And yeah, whether you believe he's done enough already to be given that responsibility, I think is a matter that would divide a lot of people. But he's got good momentum, hasn't he? And his reputation is absolutely, you know, sky high at the moment, Wayne Rooney. So I wouldn't blame him if they did make an approach. But look, Roberto Martinez is probably a safer bet given his CV. But one day, Wayne Rooney, I would imagine, would manage Everton if he can continue to succeed. I thought he did really well in this game as well. He made a change at half time with Ebisele, who played left back for a change. He's normally on the right. At half time, he changed it and he took off Joswiak, who can be very hit or miss, often more miss than hit, really. Took him off, put Forsyth on at left back and pushed Ebisele down the right. You know, that was an unbelievable run from the young player there. So it's another big tick in the box for Wayne Rooney. He is a smart manager. I think he's got excellent game awareness.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you look at this now, the situation as well with Everton, and you wouldn't want Rooney to perhaps make the same, I don't know if you could call it mistake, but the same move that Frank Lampard did after being at Derby and then going back to his club. So I feel like it'd be smarter for Rooney to hold off and see where he might be able to kind of make a bit more of a gradual step up. Also, the situation at Derby is difficult, but the situation at Everton isn't great either. But I do think as a coach, like Adrian said, I think Rooney looks like he's got more coaching ability than Lampard did have. I mean, Lampard was much more of a kind of important figure within the club and reconnecting the fans. But I don't think his coaching ability was always particularly impressive. Whereas I think Rooney's shown quite a lot of promise during his time at Derby County, that he does know what he's doing when it comes to the way his team taught to play, and that change in the game was a masterstroke.
Well, that was a great game in terms of the goals, the quality, the emotion, etc. But I think game of the day in the Championship went down at Kenilworth Road. Luton and Bournemouth shared five goals in a thriller in Bedfordshire, which ended in style.
This is Naismith!
Your old Chargers then, Sam, big win for them. Another good result against the top team as well after that draw against Fulham. Were they worthy of the 3 points here?
Oh, well, it's no fluke the way they keep winning games and taking points late on. I think kind of a beautiful sight when the fourth official holds his board up and there's a few minutes for Luton to go and attack. So I think you highly commend them for that. I think Nathan Jones, when it was Campbell got injured in the second half, he pushed Cal Naismith into midfield. And Naismith is just having an unbelievable season, irrelevant of where he's positioned, centre of a back three, left of a back three, even in midfield. So that came to fruition for him beautifully, Nathan Jones, at the weekend. I text a couple of Scottish mates of mine in the past month or so saying how good Naismith is, and I won't tell you what their response was because they cannot believe that this player's churning out these consistent performances, because I think he's a bit of a maverick and his career is really on a good looking trajectory at the moment. He could probably get a move off the back of how well he's playing. But I thought that was interesting. I thought Cameron Jerome starting after it looked like he wasn't going to probably be at the club, I would say, a few weeks ago, months ago, looked like he wasn't getting any game time at all. So I thought his partnership with Adebayo was very good in comparison to Bournemouth's attack, which of course had its moments, but Solanke looked a bit isolated. So another great scout for Luton, and hugely impressive given that they've not been playing football at all really in the last few weeks and months. So Nathan Jones has got them firing in those last two games, FA Cup and now a league victory.
Luton were brilliant, but I think for Bournemouth, it's just kind of another example of how important Philip Billing is to them. I mean, they just felt like they couldn't get going in midfield at all. They were overrun for a lot of the game. That sort of the high wing backs that Luton have just kind of overloaded them, and Bournemouth couldn't compete really in the centre of the park. And I think it's probably worrying for Scott Parker about how much losing a player like that. I mean, it only seems like a short-term absence because it's just a knock, but it is probably worrying how much that impacts his whole entire side. And it's probably positive that they still managed to score two goals even without him, but he certainly plays a massive part defensively and going forward, goals and assists he's got this season. So I think they do need to think about the way that they play without him and who's going to provide that dominant force in midfield to just get control of the game.
Yeah, he's had top billing, no doubt about that. Two questions for you, Clarkie, one on each team. Firstly, Bournemouth, can they afford to be getting no points in this kind of game? I looked at their run-in. Last five games, Borough, Coventry, Fulham, Blackburn, and then they finish at home to Millwall. So they might regret these kind of games where they ought to have been taking something and got nothing. And secondly, if you're not having Steve Cooper's fist pump, what are you making of Nathan Jones's knee slide, which, by the way, is now Luton's Twitter account's header?
I'm not having Steve Cooper, as we know, with his pre-planned USP, trying to impress the fans. What we saw with Nathan Jones is just natural impulse from a passionate manager. He didn't do it to get on side with the fans, to say, look, I'm one of you. I really am, like Mr. Cooper. And Jonesy was a total sort of overreaction, really. I think when he looks back, he'll probably say, got a touch carried away. But no, nothing against that at all. And I was interested. I saw some quotes from Nathan. He was saying, look, I did go overboard, but... And he injured his hamstring as well, by the way, which is quite funny.
I saw that.
Yeah, but he said it's just for moments like that is what we work those long hours for. And he said, look, we've worked an 80-hour week this week. And it does put it into perspective. It's not just him, of course, and managers up and down the land are all doing the same along with their staff. But he said that, you know, members of his staff have been sleeping in the office, have been really, really late nights sort of working on analysis and plans for the game ahead. It is such an all-consuming job. And when you get those unbelievable moments, and it was a brilliant moment from Caldini, as they call him now, you've got to enjoy it. So I'm not going to hammer Nathan at all. As for Bournemouth, I think they'll be all right. It's a disappointment. It's one of those days where they weren't really at it. As Flo said, the midfield was poor on the day. 2-2 wouldn't have been the worst result in the world. So it feels worse, I think, the fact that they conceded late on. By the way, very quickly, Jack Stacey's assist for Marcondes' goal, definitely worth a mention, absolutely sensational. He obviously loves Kenilworth Road, but no doubt he's inspired a little bit by Ethan Laird's arrival at Bournemouth. It's amazing what a bit of competition can do for a player.
All right, two of our panel were cock-a-hoops after their beloved Queen's Park Rangers left it late to snatch all 3 points against West Brom at the Kyan Prince Foundation Stadium. Former baggy Charlie Austin with a last-minute winner, which sees Rangers leapfrog Albion into fourth place. We'll start with a tough question. Flo, what did you make of that kit that QPR were wearing?
Well, I think it's a nice idea. Obviously, most people would look at that and just say, why are you wearing Wickham's kit? And Ian Holloway said the same on Quest. But I think when you watch the video about why they created it, I think it's a nice idea. They've done similar in the past, actually, for an anniversary kit back when Ainsworth was in the team. But I think it's fine. But what a sort of potentially season-defining result. And it's been a difficult couple of weeks for Charlie Austin because his performances haven't been great. But I do think that is the difference with a player like him and, say, Lyndon Dykes. Even when he's not at his fittest, even when he's not at his sharpest, he still can be clinical with a good opportunity that comes his way. And Chris Willock as well with the delivery. Ilias Chairs out at the African Cup of Nations, probably not getting as much game time as he deserves. So Chris Willock is very much the star of the show at the moment and crucial for any creativity that QPR are going to have. And he's kind of stepped up when they needed him. But I think Yohan Barbé was probably the star of the show, finishing the game with kind of a bloodied bandage. He played every minute of every game last season and has pretty much done the same again this season. Played on, made two ridiculous challenges during the game to stop West Brom from scoring. He's out of contract in the summer. I'm pretty confident they're going to secure a new deal for him. Just, you know, it's about the club and the player meeting the right price. But I feel like he does definitely want to stay and he seems to be enjoying his time there. And I just don't know how he's managed to stay fit for that entire period. It's pretty impressive. But like I think we've probably talked about before, such a tight squad. You know, they've only really got three fit centre-backs at the moment. So if they lose any of those players, it will dramatically impact their chances of how high they're going to finish this season. So I think there's still an important few weeks of this window left to try and bring in a couple of extra bodies. But all in all, I mean, it's just been such a good season so far.
Yeah, Barbé did well to walk in a straight line, didn't he, after he got launched into the advertising hoardings by Daryl DK. On that kit, by the way, QPR produced it, they say, to commemorate 140 years since the first foundations of the club were laid. According to the website, the kit offers a perfect fit and maximum freedom of movement, made from soft and comfortable skin technical fabric, which, thanks to its double knit structure, ensures ventilation and optimum body temperature, just like the kits of 140 years ago. It can be yours for £59.95, which is very much a 2022 price. My word. Sam, Charlie Austin, he's not Kevin Gallen, he's not Solaires, but he's a pretty important figure in QPR's recent history.
He is, yeah. I mean, he's part of a promotion-winning team, scored goals in the Premier League. He's come back and scored important goals again. And, I mean, he's from Hungerford, isn't he, Charlie? So you'd probably argue that Reading, Swindon's more his local side. But he buys into what being a QPR player is for the, you know, supporters looking on. And I think his wife was involved in something pre-Christmas as well at the club, some charity work. So he clearly loves being at QPR. And yeah, typical Austin finish. I don't disagree with anything that Flo said. I think those strikers are just about doing enough. We don't have a top level championship striker right now, I would argue. But with Willock's creativity and Chair when he comes back, those two are the key components alongside Barbé and Jimmy Dunn, who I thought was miles off it at the start of the season. And I've watched him live a few times recently. He's been nothing short of magnificent. You know, most clearances, most interceptions at the weekend in this game, complimenting brilliant work done by Barbé alongside him. So, no, it's going brilliantly. And, yeah, I mean, Barbe's been in West London a long time now. And, yeah, there's not a big hatred between Brentford and QPR, but he's made that step no problem at all. And no reason as to why he won't want to stay and play for Mark Warburton and try and get in the Premier League with them.
Clarkie, if I could borrow a Flo-ism, the juju around West Brom feels pretty bad at the moment. No wins in four, and it's like they're pinning everything on Daryl Dike to get them over the line, which doesn't seem like a brilliant plan.
No. Well, if you look at their form across the last 12 matches, West Brom are the 18th best team in the Championship. I mean, 12 matches is quite a large run, and 17 teams have accrued more points. Birmingham, we know how bad Birmingham are. They've got more points than West Brom over that period of time. So they're not in good form. The away form is really bad. I think 5 points from a possible 27 since the start of October. So none of that is promotion form. In this game, I actually thought they played all right. It was a competitive game. Could have gone either way. They were depleted, weren't they? Matt Clark was the only proper centre-half they had available. So this one wasn't a disaster, but in general, they've been poor. And yeah, as you rightly say, DK's under massive pressure to single-handedly turn their season around. I don't think he can on his own, although they did look better when he came on. I mean, he's lucky in some ways. He didn't get sort of, I don't know whether he was lucky not to get sent off, but what he did when he knocked Barbe into the dugout was a bit naughty, wasn't it? It was. It could easily have got punished.
Well, wasn't he not even a free kick or a yellow card for that? It was mad. But I mean, West Brom probably should have had a penalty as well. So
yeah.
I think Varun Ismail was understandably pretty cheesed off about that.
Can I just say that DK shoulder barge, it took me right back to a day I'll never forget. It was on the Arsenal training ground. And I think I'd scored a goal in this five-a-side. And I was being a bit of a cheeky git, sort of rubbing people's noses in it. And I'd done something to upset John Hartson through this. And John's the nicest, sort of softest big man ever. And he just lost it with me. And he gave me a DK-style shoulder barge. And honestly, I think I went off the pitch. Like, it was that far. It was so embarrassing. And I got laughed. Yeah, laughed into the change rooms, I think, afterwards, because I got ragdolled. But yeah, that's what DK did to Barbe. Unbelievable strength.
Ayl Berkovic listening in going, yeah, that sounds really bad. Really feel for you there, Adrian. elsewhere, nothing can stop the monumental rise of two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. Well, nothing except all the other teams around them winning as well. Still, who doesn't love a last-minute winner? That's what Lewis grabbed at the Den. Forest inflicting capital punishment on London Oppo for the second week in succession. Flo, you were there. Couldn't miss our boys in that kit, could you?
Yeah, and I'm really annoyed because I was convinced one of them was going to pass it to a steward by accident and they didn't, which was really annoying because it was literally exactly the same as a high-vis jacket that a steward might be wearing. Yeah, I really felt for Millwall actually, but in a very cliche fashion, if you don't take your chances, then you're going to come back and bite you. I think injuries are becoming a massive issue for Gary Wright. Lost Tom Bradshaw on Saturday. He slipped in the box in the first half and kind of twisted his knee, but Rowett said afterwards that Bradshaw said he heard a pop, which is never what you want to hear as a player, so that doesn't sound great. Shea Ojo came off at the start of the second half, rolled his ankle. Rowett said that swelled up. Hutchinson was limping at one point. He's a, you know, a brave guy, and I'm sure will, you know, probably manage to play the rest of the season. Jed Wallace, obviously linked to Forest, has been injured. The injury issues are piling up, and with every man they lose, there's more creativity that goes out the window. Benikofobi looked good on Saturday, but missed some good chances. But the belief with Forest is brilliant, and I think, you know, I was asking Steve Cooper afterwards about kind of, you know, making your own luck at times. And I think they did do that. They rode their luck for a lot of their game. Samba pulled off some worldy saves. But you could tell that they kind of thought they were going to find the winner, even though they were pretty anonymous the entire first half. You know, created one chance that Yates had. And then out of nowhere, they get the winner. And yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And when you've got that belief, it just makes such a difference. And they haven't had that before. So even without a ton of creativity, I think, you know, they're marching towards the playoffs, it looks like.
It just has to be so backhanded when anybody on this podcast pays Forrest a compliment. Remarkable. I had 20 shots in the second half, by the way, so it wasn't that against the run of play getting a goal. Sam, I'm just going to chuck this on you blind with absolutely no warning. But where does Brees Samba rank in terms of the Championship's best keepers? Because I feel like he never, ever gets a mention. He had a dodgy start to the season, as everybody else who played for Forest did. But as Flo said, he pulled off some unbelievable saves in this game. And he's been doing that for the majority of his time in English football.
I think if you rewind a couple of seasons, he was in me and Clarkey's team of the year, wasn't he? Mm, he was definitely he in was. My six-month team of the season, I think. So
yeah.
I was a big fan of his in his initial season. I think he's had some sticky spells, hasn't he? But the Forest fans have always loved him. And yeah, I think I've always been pretty complimentary about him on the podcast. So right up there would be my answer, just tucked in behind Senny Dieng, Jordan Archer and David Marshall.
Very good. Adrian, I'm just looking at the championship table now. Are we thinking it's basically from Huddersfield to Forest as the teams who will be able to break into the playoffs? So Forest in 10th on 37 points. That's 4 points ahead of Millwall. Huddersfield just a point behind sixth place Middlesbrough. Is it those four teams who might threaten the four who are already in the playoffs?
Yeah, I can see exactly why you'd ask that question. I think... yes is my best guess. I'd go to Forest. I think they've obviously got a great chance, but below them, I'm not sure. The only ones are Sheffield United, who obviously lost at the weekend, but they've got loads of games in hand, and we know that they've got a quality squad. So they might have a chance of getting there. But yeah, I think that's what we're looking at now. The top 10 plus Sheffield United are the playoff contenders, and it's all to play for, isn't it? It really is. And yeah, I'd echo everything that's been said about Forest. Just very efficient, very good on the counter-attack. It was another turn of pace, wasn't it, from Brennan Johnson that unlocked the door. He can do nothing all game. And I think that what Forest have got to be wary of now is that Spence and Johnson are marked men. Okay, I think Millwall did a good job of closing their space down in the game. Didn't impact it as regularly as they did against Arsenal. And that's what's going to happen now, because everyone knows they're rapid and they're very, very dangerous and they link up well. So they've got to find a way. And in this game, Brennan Johnson had that one little bit of gap, didn't he, to surge into. He did it, opened the door and you know, hey presto, Lewis Grabban scores. So yeah, well done. Well done, Nottingham Forest. Excellent.
Is that good enough for right, you, Matt? Well, that'll do. Can we move on now?
Yeah. Small matter of Forest derby next weekend, by the way. Just wanted a brief word on Fulham 6, Bristol City 2. Let's just throw another random question at you, Sam. Is Mitrovic the best ever championship striker?
Wasn't there an article about this recently? Clarkey contributed as well, I believe. Who did you go for, Clarkey?
I went for Dwight Gayle because he's got a ridiculous record. Yeah.
Because you were assigned him in the beast. Yeah, quite. That's usually how it works. He's up there though, isn't he? I mean, he had that little dry spell and yeah, now he's very much back.
Yeah, he is. I liked Ollie saying on Saturday night that basically he's fouled the defender a couple of times, but it's slightly less subtle now than it would have been in previous seasons, which didn't make a great deal of sense to me, let's be honest. But
what were your thoughts on Ollie's jumper? Just while we're on Ollie.
Too heavy.
A little bit fisherman for TV.
It was very sort of E17 vibes. I was intrigued by the selection.
It's got to be lighter unless it's snowing in the studio.
Yeah, totally.
in a sentence. But
he didn't go for the Parkin V-neck, which is an interesting choice. But you know, some people can't get it right every week.
V-neck, really?
Are you not a quarter? Yeah, you're a quarter zip man, aren't you?
Oh yeah, the quarter zip. They come up from time to time. Yep. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Mitrovic is definitely the best striker ever in the championship currently. So I will be fascinated if they get promoted to see if he can go up and be dreadful again. That'd be amazing. It can't happen, can it? Surely, because of the way he's finishing at the moment is unbelievable. I was at the Reading game and circumstances went against Reading that night, but Fulham are scintillating going forward at the moment, and it's the support cast as well. Big threat from set pieces, you know, the last two games as well. They look like they're almost getting ahead on every delivery in the box, you know, whether it flies in or not. They're brilliant in front of goal right now.
Bristol City's second goal, was that the best one of this game? There are a few crackers you could
I think so, out. Yeah. It was a shame, wasn't it, for Antoine Semenyo that they got battered in the end, because it was... you know, virtuoso performance from him at times.
Semenyo's away on, again. Antoine. Can he shrug off Harrison Reed? He shoots! Oh, hits the post! And in! What a remarkable finish from Antoine Semenyo. He doubles his tally for the afternoon.
I think it was Sam recently had said that Semenyo was coming to the fore and is starting to look like a real player, someone that can be a force in the Championship. And yeah, we got a real glimpse there, didn't we? He's still pretty young. Love the way he sort of shrugged off Tim Ream with ease and to surge through at goal. Great little dummy for the other one as well, and dragging the ball from one foot to the other. So yeah, keep your eyes on Semenyo. In a pretty average Bristol City team, he could be someone that, you know, if he maintains that level, that goes places.
Now then, it'll be up to producer Abby as to whether any of that Parker and Jumper chat actually makes the edit. One thing that definitely will are the odds that she's about to finish us with, courtesy of Paddy Power.
Yeah, we've got four games in the midweek in the Championship, and Fulham at Birmingham obviously leaps off the page as the one to watch. If you fancy Fulham to carry on their ridiculous goal-scoring form and for this game to have over 3.5 goals, you're looking at 31-20 with Paddy Power. If you fancy a 4-1 win for Fulham, I've just plucked that one out, that's 14-1. And just worth noting that Alex Mitrovic is 16-1 on to be the top scorer in the Championship. The other game I quite like the look of was Reading versus Luton. Luton are the odds-on favourites to beat the Royals. They're 19-20, Reading 27-10, and the draw is 12-5.
Those Mitro goalscorer odds, particularly mad when you think there's another player who's already got 20 league goals in the division. Right, we're going to head to League One next.
It's the Paddy Power Football Supporters Support Line. We're talking to Arsenal fan Dave about his New Year's resolutions. How's the 10,000 steps going, Dave?
Yeah, it's going great, thanks.
The 50 push-ups?
Every day.
And how about moaning less about Arsenal?
Oh, seriously, mate, we need to sign a new midfielder if we want top four. And don't get me started on Liverpool postponing that cup.
Being a football fan isn't always rewarding. But if it's rewards you're after, you can get money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power. Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Min 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. T&Cs apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show. That's theathletic.com/league show.
In League One, Wickham are the new leaders after they beat Oxford, and Sunderland and Rotherham both stumbled. Wigan just about squeezed past bottom side Doncaster, whilst Wednesday boosted their playoff hopes by thumping Plymouth. Bolton gave their chances of beating the drop a shot in the arm after seeing off Ipswich. Transfer-wise, Chuksanike's rejoined Charlton just 6 months after leaving the Valley for Birmingham. He scored a late equaliser for the Addicts at the weekend. Gillingham have brought in Watford keeper Pontus Dahlberg after previous loanee custodian Jamie Cummings swapped the Jills for MK Dons. And Fleetwood have signed defender Toto Insiala, who's not in Kansas anymore. He's not in Ipswich anymore either. He did get an assist on his debut though. Double delight for Wickham at Adams Full Car Park on Saturday. Not only did the Chair Boys move top of League One, but they also beat their local rivals to do so. Clarke, you had a stat earlier in the season about Wickham having an easier run in. Is that going to make you change your mind as to the destination of the Championship trophy?
Well, they're in the mix, that is for sure, because their run in on paper isn't bad at all. They've played all of the top eight away from home. That was the stat that I dropped in a few weeks ago. And at home, they've still got to face Rotherham, Wigan, MK Dons, Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth. And we know that Wickham are really, really strong at home. So they're potentially huge six-pointers, all of those games. And you'd fancy them to win a selection of them, wouldn't you? So, no, they have to be considered as contenders. But you could look around all of them and they've all got a great claim to go up this season, haven't they? Wigan with the games in hand, you've been outstanding. Rotherham, I think, are the strongest team in the division, the hardest maybe to beat. And then you've got Sunderland as well, who are talented, but as we've seen of late, a little bit flaky. So, two from four is going to be really harsh on the two that miss out.
Sam, Wickham's the next club of yours. Just try and put into context for us what an achievement it would be for them to get promotion to the Championship twice in the space of three seasons.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. There's still, I suppose, I don't want to say non-league feel to it, but they do have that kind of underdog spirit running through the club. I think that's in evidence when you meet the people at the club, the people that support them since the likes of Martin O'Neill were at the helm. And they remain, you know, I think unfancied by people, you know, outside the club, especially with some of the powerhouses in that division. But again, I just think Gareth Ainsworth subtly is changing and making them more adaptable. They've got more footballers in the team. That is unquestionable. Gareth McCleary, you know, probably wouldn't have got in a Wigan team 2 years ago. He is the craft. I thought the balance in the midfield for this game in particular, I've spoke about Mimetti being playing in the midfield. He was further forward here, and he had Thompson back in the midfield alongside Schoen. That's a much better League One midfield for ball winning and having a little bit more muscle in there. And I think that's where the game was won. I think Oxford United, well, they struggled against Wickham in the playoff final. And I don't think with the players they've got missing right now can match the physicality, the way that Wickham squeezed the game. And I think that was obvious with the trio that they can field at the moment in midfield. So I don't think it's the end of Oxford, but I think they probably need to do a couple of bits of business, I would say, in January for their supporters' sake and for Carl Robinson. I think another striker.
It was really interesting to hear the post-match thoughts of Carl Robinson. I think they had a long, long chat with the Oxford players in the dressing room afterwards. He said he wasn't ranting or raving, but he basically was doing the old manager's favourite one after a defeat. You know, if you want to be here, great. If you don't, come and see me and you can go. It was one of those. Managers have been doing it since the beginning of time. And I think his biggest beef with his team at the moment is that he thinks that they're playing as individuals and not as a team. Obviously, Wickham, very cohesive, aren't they? Very united. He doesn't feel that Oxford United are as together maybe as some of the other teams in the division, playing as individuals was sort of one of the things that he hinted at, wasting energy on individual things rather than making good decisions for the team. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see who does leave Oxford United this month, because he's laid down the gauntlet now.
Again, Flo, just screams of juju that's less than perfect to me, this about Oxford. Obviously, they've got a sort of new owner, new stadium coming, new investment. One win in five. I'm not saying it's promotional bust for Carl Robinson, but he's getting pretty close to that, hasn't he? Isn't he? He's been there for a reasonable amount of time, been, you know, into the playoffs and whatever, but it always seems to be a little stutter quite often around this point of the season, and it just falls apart a bit.
Yeah, it's been not a good start to the year for them. They've only got 1 point from three games, scored one goal, conceded five. But they have been in and around the playoffs for a good chunk of the season. So, like you said, they always know that they compete. But I think there's a frustration there that against the weaker sides, they can dominate and win games. But against any team that kind of figures them out, works out how to set up against them, which Wickham did very well, they will struggle. And they're struggling to break down sides that are well organised defensively. And I think that's a big issue, because if they're going to break through and secure a playoff spot and also try and challenge some of the teams that are, you know, way more consistent than they are at the top of the table, then they need to have a bit of a backup plan when they're not breaking down teams. But I think when you look at the table now, like you said, with how tight the promotion race is, I mean, even the playoffs at the end of the season are going to be brilliant, because it's just so, so tight, and things could change dramatically with all those games in hand that all the teams have. You know, just in the space of a couple of weeks, things could swing pretty quickly.
Shock of the day came at Highbury, where Fleetwood beat erstwhile table toppers Rotherham. Something about games in the northwest that seemed to disagree with the Millers. Sam, am I being too kind to say that the quagmire of a pitch really worked against Rotherham here?
Yeah, I think you are, Matt, probably. Rotherham can mix their game up, shall I say. They put a lot of balls into the box. I don't know if the flanks were particularly destroyed, but yeah, I mean, I don't see it being too much of a problem for them. What I do see as a problem is they've stopped scoring all of a sudden, just two in the last four games. There's some quite interesting stuff with Paul Warne and Freddie Ladapo. Obviously, he's had some interest from elsewhere. He wants to leave the club. Paul Warne opted to bring Kayode on in front of him for the misfiring Will Grigg at halftime, and that needs resolved because him and Michael Smith are the key components to getting Rotherham back into the Championship. And poor deliveries from wide at the weekend. I spoke about Ferguson and Ogben providing ammunition for the strikers. I think 40 deliveries from wide, just 9 successful ones at the weekend. So, yeah, the strikers are the problem right now. Getting goals defensively, Rotherham, you know, the best in the business really at that level.
Yeah, just to extend on that, I mean, he's being stubborn with not playing Ladapo, and he said afterwards that he's training well and they haven't fallen out on all this, but he's got to make a call because they are missing out on points in games through this stubbornness with dropping him. And clearly there isn't anyone good enough to play in his spot at the moment. And it does seem to be impacting the rest of the squad as well. So if he's not going to... Well, I mean, you can see it both ways as well, because also by playing him, you're putting in him in the shop window anyway. So if he plays well, that's only going to aid the chances of Rotherham selling him. And then by not playing him, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot because you're missing out on goals that way. So it seems like a bad idea to have this kind of medium way, sitting on the bench unhappy, probably unhappy in training too, and the club aren't getting anything from it.
It takes me back to Peterborough United this time last year, and Siriki Dembele was the subject of great interest, I think, from teams at a higher level, and he put in a transfer request. Peterborough politely declined it and said, well, we're going to ignore that, but we'll let you play. And yeah, as exactly what Flo just said, we'll let you go and you can play in the shop window as long as your attitude is okay. Go out there and play and do the business and stay with us till the end of the season, maybe, and see where you stand. And of course, they went up and he stayed. And yeah, it's been quite a positive story. And he was excellent during that second half of the season. There was no sulking from Dembele at Posh. So yeah, hopefully, if Ladapo is a good lad, then that's something that they can come to an agreement on.
Abby, can we get some odds on League One, please?
As you asked so nicely, yes, you can. Another 4 matches in League One in the midweek. I've put together an acca on the 4 favourites here. So Rotherham to get back to winning ways against Lincoln, they're 4-9. Wigan, the favourites against Morecambe, they're away, but they are 13-8 on to win that one. Cambridge are the favourites against Doncaster. They are 7-10. And then it's a bit tricky between AFC Wimbledon and Portsmouth. Not really either in great moments, either of them, but I will go with the favourites on this one, which is Portsmouth, despite the fact that Wimbledon are my local team. Portsmouth are 5-7. That brings your acca to 8-1 if you fancied backing all those 4 favourites.
Well done for getting the 13 in there, Abby. Always love to hear that. We'll dip into League 2 next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
In League 2, shock. Forest Green Rovers only 7 points clear with a game in hand after being held by Northampton. Second place Tranmere, the beneficiaries. They beat Rochdale 2-0. Bottom side, Oldham's game with Orient was called off due to COVID cases, but second bottom, Scunthorpe, failed to capitalise. They lost to Exeter. Mansfield won again. It's happening, lads. And Harry McCurdy signed a contract extension at Swindon, having initially inked a 1-year deal when he joined last summer. You happy about that, Sam?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, loved the Maverick in Harry McCurdy. And he's playing brilliantly. 3 assists, I think. He's claiming assists for something peculiar. I can't remember what it was, but there was that beautiful slip through ball for Johnny Williams, a deflected shot, and the penalty when he got fly kicked. There you go. That's not an assist.
Let's have a look at Northampton 1, FGR 1 then. Northampton remain in the third automatic promotion place after they fought back to earn a point against the runaway leaders. So, Clarkie, nobody won, but maybe both teams won. Northampton were never going to catch Forest Green Rovers, but they end a run of successive defeats and FGR set a club unbeaten league run. Keep everyone at arm's length.
Yeah, everyone's a winner, I think, except no one on the day. But yeah, it's really good result for Northampton. I said, I think, on the last pod that there were signs from the second half of their previous game against Crawley that they're getting back up to speed again. And yeah, in this particular match, they basically grit their teeth. They rode it out. Very resilient performance in midfield. There's some big performances as well from individuals. I think Sean McWilliams in midfield, 5 tackles, 4 interceptions. He was here, there and everywhere. And Mitch Pinnock, who scored that late equaliser, was the man of the match. He worked his socks off on the sort of left side of the attack. He saved probably a certain goal by tracking back and stopping them on the counter attack single handedly. So yeah, it was good scenes, wasn't it? At the end, it was like it was a cup game, and Northampton has sort of clinched it right at the death with the fans running onto the pitch. It just shows you, yeah, what it means, I guess, to the Northampton fans to potentially go up this season. But yeah, big point for them. Forest Green, it's not bad, is it? You've gone to one of your main rivals away from home, almost won the game, and I think they've proven that they can handle these tough away tests. Again, that's something we talked about before. Haven't had many games at the best teams away from home this season. They've done it at the weekend and they very nearly won.
Flo, did you laugh as hard as I did at the Forest Green defender who flung himself to the floor in the build-up to the equaliser after what looked like a nasty gust of wind put him right around the side of the face?
Yeah, that was really embarrassing. They talked about it on Quest. And who was it again?
Nicky Cadden.
If he had stayed on his feet, and he probably would have had a better chance of actually defending the cross that then comes into the box to get the equaliser. So yeah, it's just really embarrassing when you actually go down like you've absolutely been sniped. But I mean, Forest Green Rovers are so good, and I think, unlike most of the teams in the division, I think they just show that you can effectively lead from the back with their defensive record kind of being all they need to keep them going. 11 clean sheets from 24 games. They, on average, concede less than one goal a game. It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And they kind of have the confidence to know that you know, the goals will come from other areas. But then if you have those defensive foundations, I mean, that's kind of going to get you places. So, yeah, so impressive. And I don't think anyone can catch them.
Sam, the FGR goal enraged Northampton. You could kind of see why. No goal line technology in League Two, but, you know, usually appoint an assistant with reasonable eyesight, and that would have mitigated against this particular incident.
Can't believe Clarkey didn't bring it up. He's first to slaughter referees in London. Unbelievable scenes. From my eyes and what I've seen, it's never a goal in a million years. I think the goalkeeper actually ruffles the net, and that's probably why it's been given. As if the ball's actually made contact with a rigging.
But definitely.
It's definitely not in. Definitely not in from what I've seen. So probably right that Northampton were able to get the equaliser. And thanks for Nicky Cadden for supplying us with that moment of brilliance to go along with it.
Sam, I am going to save my wrath of referees for the next game. So you'll be pleased to know.
Oh, my goodness. Come on, Matt. Give it to him. This is the worst I've ever seen.
All right, so this was a 3-3 draw between Stevenage and Sutton. Sutton came from 2-0 down and equalising the 8th minute of stoppage time. But go on then, Clarky, that wasn't your takeaway from the game.
Not often do I get furious at a penalty decision. Especially, I'm a long time retired. I know I'm a former Stevenage player and I want Stevenage to do well. But really, it's no biggie to me whether they concede a penalty or not. But that made me furious. It is one of the worst calls. I've written it here. Sam, I wish you could see my notes. One of the worst calls I've ever seen. So we're on the same page there. It's a great tackle. He's knocked the ball so cleanly behind for a corner that you know, only somebody with very bad eyesight or no clue about football would realise that is not a foul. It is a joke.
It's a really good challenge.
It was a superb challenge. And yeah.
A Sutton player appeals for a corner. Yeah. Just makes it for me.
I like Matt Gray quite a bit, and I liked him admitting that it wasn't a penalty. Flo, I bet you've done a bit of Sutton on your BBC London rounds. They're pretty much the story of the season in League Two, really, aren't they? Especially after that whiffy start that they had. They're just absolutely flying now.
Yeah, I can't believe where they are on the table. It's amazing. And I mean, you talked about the belief that your lovely Forest have had over the last couple of weeks, but the number of late goals that Sutton have got is ridiculous. They just do not give up. I think it's what, 9 goals in the last 10 minutes of games they were talking about on Quest. And perhaps I think what was so great about this game, and I think probably maybe it's actually better for Sutton where games turn into this chaos, is coming from non-league, you're probably used to a little bit of chaos every now and again, and it's probably not necessarily that hard to step up then into League Two when you're playing in games that are equally as chaotic, because the stuff that they've had to deal with in some of their matches this season has been pretty mad. So I think they almost want that. They want the slight kind of, amateur is a harsh word, but you kind of know where I'm going. Just kind of messy. I think they like the mess, and I think that suits the way they want to play, is just kind of going back to basics football. You can't fault them, because it's just ridiculous. Fifth, I just never would have seen that coming.
Did you guys see the dribble from the goalkeeper? I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He was basically playing at like wing back at one point. Buzanis, who's the partner of Steph Catley, who plays for Arsenal Women. I mean, he's been sensational, was massive in their promotion last season, and has had a really good season so far. And he plays so high up the pitch. He's really good with the ball at his feet. And it just, yeah, they just are mad.
Sam, Stevenage denied back-to-back league wins for the first time this season, but they're not going down under your old gaffer, are they? They've got, what, 5 points between them and second bottom Scunthorpe, and they just look better than the teams below them. That is my very basic analysis.
No, definitely. You know, he's got a new formation, which he's sticking with. I think Van Kooten had to play in midfield in this one because Boswick wasn't around, and he looked to be the most natural holding midfielder that he was going to go with. But I think, you know, with any manager going to a new club, when you've got people that you know, Jamie Reid, Jake Taylor, that's two of the front three already. They know how Paul Tisdale works. There's that personal relationship there. I think Luke Norris looks to be the story of the start of the Paul Tisdale tenure. And there's a player there in Norris, you know. I saw him have some unbelievable performances at Swindon. It's just consistency and maybe believing in himself. But as a League Two striker, he should be right up there, because he's got a good touch, can bring people in, and he'll be really important for Stevenage moving forward. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the three below them, I think there's a big gulf in squad depth and quality if you compare it to Stevenage. They've got far too much to go down now.
Abby, can you give us some odds on League Two, please?
I can indeed. Matt, do you think your stag party is going to end anytime soon?
No, I don't. I think it's going to end in May with champagne popping everywhere and then lots of bitterness and regret the next day, just like every stag party I've ever been at.
So you're backing them to beat Forest Green on Tuesday night at Forest Green? Okay, that's 16-5. Forest Green 3-4, and the draw is 13-5. If you fancy backing Sutton United to carry on their good form, they're playing Colwyn on Tuesday, so you'd expect a win there, as do Paddy Power. They're 11-8 on to win that game, with Colwyn 4-1. And Stevenage favourites against John Yem's Crawley Town. They are 11-10, with Crawley coming in at 12-5. A few other games there, but I won't go through them all now.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. Prices are accurate at the time of recording and when the fun stops. Stop. And now then, before we go, after Ian Evatt said that Bolton will be in the Premier League in 5 years, I want to know who our panel think will be in the Premier League in 5 years. You can't pick like Man United or somebody. It's got to be somebody fairly obscure. Sam, who have you gone for?
Well, it's far too obvious for me to say QPR, because they're going to be in there next season. So I'm going to go for Luton Town. Oh. I'm not saying they're going to be there to stay. I'm going to just go for the story that's gone full circle. Yeah, once in the top division, been in the non-league, new stadium that they've been planning since 1942. it's all going to come to fruition. I'm not saying they're going to stay there, but great recruitment, I think, the last few seasons. There's a plan there. There's going to be some investment come from somewhere. Don't know where, but Gary Sweet and his friends on the board are going to have a nice little bit of change come in, and they're going to do it, maybe via the playoffs.
Nice. All right. I was going to go for Forest, but I can't on that basis. So I'll say Wickham. I think they'll get a £50 million payout from Derby in the EFL, and it'll be able to shoot them up the leagues. Flo, who do you go for?
I'm going to go with Sheffield Wednesday. I feel like I've got a lot of Wednesday fans in my kind of friendship and family group. And I think they deserve to be back up at the top. It's been a really rough couple of years to be a Wednesday fan. And I think they're a big club that need to be back at the very top of English football. And the last couple of years as well, like the way that the teams that they've sort of brought out have been really crap to watch. So I'd quite like to see some entertaining football at Hillsborough as well. I feel like it's been pretty miserable all around.
All right. So that leaves you with Salford then, Clarky.
No chance, not with those dodgy owners. No, I'm going to go with Wigan or Ipswich. I'm going to sit on the fence here. Both under new ownership, both fiercely ambitious, brought some very good players with the money so far, and yeah, if they get up into the Championship, I think one or both would continue to speculate, to accumulate. And yeah, they've both been there before, haven't they, against the odds. So yeah, we're going to Ipswich. I did write down three players, just out of interest, three young players. Fabio Carvalho, Fulham. I can't see how he won't be in the Premier League, well, much sooner than 5 years, to be honest. And the two loanees, Levi Colwill at Huddersfield and Ethan Laird at Bournemouth, belonging to Chelsea and Man United, respectively. I think they are Premier League players too.
Good stuff. We'll keep a hold of those predictions and in 5 years' time play them back to much hilarity, I'm sure. Before 5 years, we'll be back on Thursday when we'll be reflecting on those games that Abby mentioned that take place in midweek and looking ahead to all the big ones in the weekend to come. Until then, many thanks to Flo, to Adrian, to Sam and to Abby and to you, listener. We'll catch up with you again later in the week. From all of us here, though, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.